recently that it's not possible to have cyphistemic theories, and I was convinced that you could have, and I was flipping back and forth. And still today, I'm not clear to me that they're possible. But the more I think about it, the more I think they are possible. But so this is the outline. First, just some introduction and heuristic ideas, what we heuristically we mean with psi epistemic theories versus psi ontic theories. There's been some mathematical criteria developed by Hardy and Barrett, Speck, and et cetera, for what theories are to be considered to be psi epistemic. In this talk, I'll introduce a new logically independent constraint for a theory to be psi epistemic, and this is a dynamical constraint. Very nice. So this needs to be fixed right away. So screensaver. Where's the, I find this one? What? To where? I just click. No? You don't want to know, okay? So it'll be a natural ending to the talk then. Okay, good. Full screen mode. Okay, good. So where were I? So in de Broglie-Bohm theory, the quantum state plays the role as a guiding agent. It choreographs the motion of point particles, and is not the probability distribution. This talk is about developing a new kind of hidden variable theory for which the quantum state would not play this role of a guiding agent, but as a pure probability distribution. We're going to be introduce mathematically precise criteria. What I mean by that. First, we're going to look into a class of ontological models or hidden variable theories that goes under the name of bell type ontological models. And then we're going to prove that in these models, they have to have this property that the quantum state is guiding individual systems. So this is not just the de Broglie-Bohm theory in this class. This includes Nelson's mechanics, the Broglie-Bohm theory, and a lot of other kind of theories. It's a framework. Then, inspired by this proof and seeing exactly where things go wrong, we're going to try to generalize these models. And then this is basically just outlining what we're going to do here. We're going to first introduce ontic states and the probability distribution on this ontic state space. Then we're going to look at the constraint imposed by the Schrödinger equation, etc. And then we're going to discuss measurement theory. This is also just a framework. So then I'm going to develop a specific model, which is probably the simplest possible of those generalized bell type models. This model I developed for a particle on a lattice, but it's easy to generalize to n particles or even field theory, if you like. In principle, it's not hard to do it. And there's some speculations in the end. So the measurement problem is sort of the following, that in any quantum measurement, you have a quantum state localized on configuration space, and it always branches up into a superposition of macroscopically distinct states. So it's not that we can have superpositions, it's not just confined to microcosmos, it's also in the macrocosmos. Now, if you think that the state is a property of an individual system, this is sort of strange, because then the wave function is sort of setting, the football is here and there at the same time. But this only comes if you think that the quantum state is a property of an individual system. If it represents a probability distribution, it's not so, you cannot draw such conclusions. So this is the case in classical probability theory, where you start with a phase-based distribution, And this could, for example, be a coin toss. The probability distribution branches up into heads and tails. And of course, the coin lands in a specific one of those to win. And it's no problem that this probability distribution branches up like this. We wouldn't draw the conclusion that the world is a superposition of heads and tails, because the probability distribution is not real in this sense. So in a sense, this is sort of Chris Fuchs' view and other view as well, that the quantum state is just represents the probability distribution or knowledge, something like that. It's not something to be attached to the system. So the quantum state is an ideal observer's information. And then, of course, Bell was famous to ask information about what? And then some people have tried to answer this question by saying it's information about possible outcomes and future measurements. But this sort of is, the shortcomings of this answer is immediate, because what precisely constitutes an outcome or a measurement in the physical world? How many atoms do we need to say that something is an outcome or a recording device? All these things are vague things. These are anthropomorphic notions. So this is one thing that Bell stressed repeatedly, that concepts like outcome, measurement, these are inherently vague and should not appear in the fundamental theory of nature. Just to make a sort of a drive this point in more, suppose you had a researcher who comes to you and he developed a fundamental theory. At least he claims it's a fundamental theory. And then, to your great surprise, you see that the theory is fundamentally about cows. Then you would object. You would say, what do you mean now? These are big objects. You cannot possibly think this is a fundamental object in nature. And what do you mean by a cow? How many atoms are they made of? Is a dog a cow, etc.? So, and this is the same kind of questions you run. I mean, this is just to sort of make a sarcastic point, but it's the same issue again. David Albert was once said that taking outcomes and measurements as fundamental in theories is like taking Catholicism as a primitive in a theory, and that's also the same point. Yeah. So the hidden variable program is just to develop empirically adequate theories in which such vague notions do not appear at the fundamental level. Yeah. So hidden variables is also a stupid name for things that represent these things. They're not hidden at all. So the better name is for hidden variables, ontic variable or beables. So Chris Fuchs complained to me that these guys here have hijacked his interpretation of quantum mechanics, the epistemic interpretation, because they also call their interpretation epistemic. They think that there actually are properties out there, mathematically precise properties, and this is sort of where I lie as well. I'd like to have a theory where these lambdas are made mathematically precise. Yeah. Okay, this is enough for. So this is sort of the psi epistemic program. It's about finding an ontological model in which the quantum state just represents a probability distribution, and also it's about developing exact mathematical criteria for deciding when ontological model could be regarded as psi epistemic. And here, of course, the key theory is de Broglie-Bohm theory, because by no reasonable definition should this theory be a psi epistemic theory. The quantum state there, or psi, does not play the role of a probability distribution. It's a guiding agent. So, and also, I mean, what makes this theory interesting is that many features of this theory is universal. So it could be that there are no psi epistemic theories. But this property of the theory, that the wave function is guiding individual system, could actually be a universal feature. That if you want to reproduce the statistics of quantum theory with the hidden variable theory, the wave function needs to guide individual systems, something like that. So this is many slides in this talk. So in the original slides, I had some outlining of what has been done by Speckens, Hardy, and Barrett, etc. And they have introduced a reasonable mathematical constraint that psi epistemic theory should satisfy. I won't go into that. I will rather focus on a new constraint I'm introducing, which is logically independent. And also, it's going to be clear that the model I'm developing is going to be psi epistemic as well, according to their definition. But that's sort of outside the talk. The intuition behind this new constraint is that the quantum state should not guide individual systems. So I've said that before. So what does it mean now? If you have any ontological model, you can just schematically view the ontic state space as, you know, few possible accessible ontic states. And then it just evolves like this in some way. Of course, this I've made some restrictions here. I've assumed that the world can be decomposed into sequence of instances. I mean, it was jumping like that. This could be a false assumption, of course. But quantum theories sort of have the same structure in it as well. It has a quantum state evolving in time. Yeah. So a key mathematical equation is the master equation. So I'm going to make heavy use of this equation in this talk. This equation simply just dictates if I have an ontic state, how probable is it that it should jump to this state, etc. So the master equation looks like this. There's positive terms here. These are called transition rates. So a transition rate tells you the probability per unit time for jumping to j to I here. And this term here, increasing the probability rho I at the ontic state I here, is just all the ones, you just sum over all the ones that would land over here. The negative piece here is just where you can jump away. You sum over all the places you can jump away. This is just sort of a balanced equation. You will have a probability of getting to the point, and you have a probability of getting away from the point. And that's the whole thing.
Nothing. It looks almost like you're assuming that there's a finite number of possible ontic states.
No, you can. This master equation, you can look at continuum limits and so on. In fact, ordinary de Broglie bone theory is a continuum limit of such a theory. So here are a few things remember, the off-diagonal components here, they have to be non-negative. If we can't have non-negative off-diagonal terms, this is not the probability of unit time. So then we don't, if we're forced to have negative transition rates, then we don't have an ontological model. Also, the diagonal components don't enter in this equation. If you look at this, they will exactly cancel out. So they're completely arbitrary. You can put them whatever you like, and they don't enter in the dynamics at all. So you can just disregard them. Okay.
So this is starting out from a differential equation point of view rather than a stochastic matrix describing finite time transitions. Is either more general or really equivalent? I mean, you could start by just demanding of a stochastic matrix taking you from the...
Yeah, but this is more general.
Which is more general?
A master equation. If you have a differential equation, you have something like there's only continuous jumps and not local jumps and so on.
That's the whole time is discrete then. But if you integrate this, you get just a stochastic matrix. If you just satisfy this condition that Tij is greater than or equal to zero, or is there an initial condition on the diagonal entries so that you have a valid?
No, I need a positive probability distribution and normalized. Then the fact that just the structure of this guy and the positivity of them will guarantee that the probability distribution continue to be they're all positive and also normalized. If they go negative, one of the probabilities could go negative. They could also be infinite, and there's no problem with that. Yeah. This happens in Bohm theory, so this was sorted out by Tomulka and Georgi. So here's just a super simple example of a light bulb. I mean, just to get some intuition about this equation. So a light bulb, most of them break after a while. So here's a working one, and there's a transition probability to a broken state, which is greater than zero. So the probability of unifying is greater than zero. And this is roughly zero to get from a broken lamp to a working lamp. And if you just solve this equation, you get the usual exponential decay law. And that's everything you need to know about it. There is some, in the literature, you find some confusion about this thing. Some people think it has to be less than one and so on. But this can take any positive value, not negative though. So here's an interesting feature which might have something to do. Well, this might have been an important point later. Note that no matter how large k is, the light bulb will never be definitely broken with probability one. So this might, I'm going to get to a model with finitely many ontic states. And this might be a key feature why it wouldn't, why it would be hard to reproduce the statistics. All this is unclear to me, but I'll get to that later. If you have an infinite transition rate, it will definitely be broken. But if you're only working with finite transition rates, you'll have this sort of anomaly that would never with probability one you'll have a broken lamp. Well, in the Broglie-Bohm theory, the transition rates can be shown to depend on the quantum state. So this is the key mathematical idea that I'll just, when I say that the quantum state guides individual particles, this is what I mean. The transition rate depends on the quantum state. So this is the mathematical, more precise way of saying these things. So this means, in particular, that the quantum state in that theory that does not play the role of a probability distribution. It's something different. And the same conclusion can be drawn also in Nelson's mechanics. It also has the feature that the transition rates depend on the quantum state. So this is the dynamical constraint I'm suggesting. Transition rates in a psi epistemic ontological model has to be independent on the quantum state. So let's consider first a special class here of models. Yeah?
Is there a difference between the transition rates being correlated with the quantum state and them being dependent on the quantum state? Or are those two?
No, they have to be completely independent of it. So that means that if I have my transition rates and I have one quantum state and I change the quantum state, the transition rates has to be exactly the same. There's going to be an ontic probability distribution in my theorem, epistemic probability distribution. That distribution can, of course, depend on what quantum state you use it, because that's just the thing that's supposed to give the quantum state. But the transition rate should not depend.
Do you have an intermediate situation where something like the absolute value of the quantum state is epistemic and that the transition rates depend only on the phase of the quantum state?
Yes. So here I'm categorically just lumping everything to, if it just depends on, you know, one digit in the quantum state as well.
Just because Nelson is in this category.
Yes. Yeah.
The Bohm too, no? Is it?
It's the phase there, and the phase depends on the.
The transition rates depend on the phase through yeah. Kind of backhanded. Yes. In the definition of the Brownian.
Yeah. But also in Nelson, right? It depends both on the size square.
We don't have to go. I think just on the phase.
Okay. Well, so here I'm just going to try to make it a clear thing and see where I end up. So bell-type ontological models are the following type. You have an n-dimensional quantum system to the quantum state rho hat and the Hamiltonian H hat. So we choose a specific basis now, then we express these Hermitian operators in such a way, rho ij and h ij. The Schrödinger equation just looks like that in this basis.
Yeah.
Now, the key idea in Bell type theories is that we think of this I here as an ontic property. So this is one of these lambdas I had before. And the diagonal components of the density matrix as the probability distribution.
Yeah.
So lambda is identified with I, rho of lambda is identified with rho I. The evolution of the probability distribution rho I, which is the diagonal component, is just given by this equation here. In order to have an ontological model, this distribution has to obey a master equation, which is just the about jumping from ontic state to a different ontic state. And here, of course, comes the transition rates. So, and they should be all, positive, of course. So let's introduce this notation here. And notice the anti-symmetry here. So the diagonal components are zero of that thing. This is just the thing what you have inside here, inside the sum. Our task now is to find transition rates so that this is the case. So that the Schrödinger equation agrees with the master equation. And it's very easy to come up with some transition rates. Here's Tij, and this you just take this Gij divided by rho j. If this is greater than zero, zero otherwise. Now notice here that we put in some part of the quantum state here, the psi square part. So because of this, this is not a generally psi epistemic theory. And then there's a natural question, is it necessary within this framework, just explained before, Bell's ontological type framework? And the answer is no here. Yeah. So it's a bit instructive to look at why it's not possible. So we proceed by proof of contradiction here. We assume that Tij does not depend on the quantum state. And this implies in particular that this guy cannot depend on the off-diagonal components of the density matrix, rho ij, where I is different from j. But since you have equality here between those two things here, we have that this guy cannot depend on the off-diagonal components either. So the logic is that these guys don't depend on the off-diagonal components. Here are only the diagonal components. So this side is trivially not dependent on the off-diagonal components. And since we have equality, this guy cannot depend on the off-diagonal components either. And if you look at this, the only way this could happen is that this is exactly equal to zero. In fact, this quantity here, if you look at it, only depends on the off-diagonal components. In this expression here, because of the anti-symmetry, it doesn't even contain those things at all. This is a complete impossibility. I don't want to go too much into this. Yeah?
If I'm correct, you've introduced probabilities over your variables. You have introduced them by means of PVM, right?
Yes.
Would that also apply for PVM? You introduce the variables for PVM? Because then I think in your master equation, all diagonal components of density matrix would play a role.
Yeah, but this is sort of related to the generalization later, I think. Yeah, well, so this will be related to the type of generalization I'll consider later. So this is sort of a proof by contradiction. You get rho hat is equal to zero. For example, this would happen for the energy eigenstate or something like, but this is not interesting theories, ontological theories. So here's the key idea that motivates the generalization of the Bell-type framework. We could derive a contradiction precisely because the probability distribution rho I did not uniquely determine the quantum state. So in this expression here, if we would have had, if this guy would have completely encoded all of the density matrices, the off-diagonal terms, everything here, there wouldn't be any problems because we would have off-diagonal terms here, off-diagonal terms there. So this is sort of a heuristic idea. So it seems necessary to develop a new class of ontological models so that the extent probability distribution uniquely determines the quantum state. This is not the case in the Broad-Bohm theory. If I specify a row of x, I still don't know my quantum state sign. And in order to do this, we need to introduce more ontological properties than you have in Bohm theory. So now I'm going to get into that. First, this today's misleading statement, or the misleading statement of 1984. And I think this thing has had some consequences on the foundations field. So Bell states that not all observables can be given Beeble states, for they do not all have simultaneous eigenvalues. They don't all commute, right? So I'm not sure if Bell actually is just making an incorrect statement, but it's very easy to do this. I can introduce properties for commuting, non-commuting observables. There's no problems whatsoever, and that will become clear. For example, Jeff Boob developed this into a uniqueness of no collapse theories, where he basically says that if you believe in no collapse type of theories, you're forced into the Bell type ontological framework. There's no other choice. But if you look at what he's doing, he's imposing questionable constraints like functional composition and so on, which is violated by ontological models that can reproduce quantum theory. So,
because, I mean, in the Bohm theory, X and P both have Beeble status. The P that has Beeble status isn't the P you measure.
Yeah. What it could have meant was the following, that if you have one property, one common property, you cannot reproduce the statistics of two observables given that. You need, for example, if I have, well, this is going to be more clear later. But I also think this is a strange thing. I mean, I don't want to make it too big deal of it, you know. I think Bell was just a short hit, as usual. So what we'll do now, first we'll go and outline the general structure of these generalist Bell type models. Then I'm going to present a specific model, which is seems to be the most simplest one of those generalized Bell type models. So this is the starting point. You have a density matrix and you have a Hamiltonian, and you realize that you can expand them in this way, where these operators are the n squared minus one generators of SUN. So together, these guys together with identity form n squared operators, and from those you can write any Hermitian operator. Yeah.
Question: Is your point that there may be vehicles which are not quantum mechanical observables? That's what the term hidden variable originally sort of connoted, that there could be many vehicles that are averaged over, but were not operators in the Hilbert space of the resulting quantum.
They should all be operators. I'll answer that question just by going forward, I think.
Can you go backwards first? So that
okay. Yes, so these things are real numbers here. That thing there is just put there, so the trace of it is 1. All the generators of SUN have trace 0. And the Hamiltonian we expand in this way. So these are the free parameters in the Hamiltonian, and that's the real numbers in the density matrix. Is that okay?
Yes.
So these are some properties. You'll have some structure coefficients. You have some anti-commutativity relations like this. The trace of all those is zero. The multiplication is like that. And from all these relations, you can just show that the expectation value of TA is just CA half. It's a convenient relation.
Which one was C? C was the one appearing in the...
in the density matrix. Yeah. And the Schrödinger equation takes a pretty, very cute form like this. I haven't seen this in the literature, but I'm sure this has been done a long time ago. But this is sort of a cute equation. So it's just the structure equations and the expectation values and the free parameters and Hamiltonian. And there's this anti-symmetry because of these guys are anti-symmetric. Now, here's the key idea. For each non-commuting operator I have, I'm just going to have a new property. For, in Bohm theory, I have the position PDM. That's a property. If I have other operators, I'm going to have more properties. So for each A here, we regard that as representing an ontic property, which we call IA now. And this guy is going to go from 1 to n squared. This is a typo here. This is just supposed to be n here. Yeah, I'm excluding the identity. You don't need that here. This is a property. It takes on values. So this is a mistake. This is just a typo. This is supposed to be n here. So this goes from 1 to n to the number of the Hilbert space, or the how many Hilbert space dimensions. This is typo. So it is true that you will have n squared minus 1 a's. You will have n squared minus 1 different properties. So and all of those guys here will take values from 1 to n. This is the most simplistic way I can do it at first. So this means that I will have huge amount of ontic states. This is overkill in the beginning, but this is just to get a main idea across. So n equals 2, I have 8 ontic states. N equals 3, it grows quickly, 6,500. It's a billion, and it grows crazy quickly. So we will later see that the number of ontic states can be greatly reduced by choosing a special representation of these operators. So this will be my specific model where I'm trying to simplify things as much as possible.
So an ontic state is just a set of generators of SUM?
It's
unordered.
Maybe this is going to be clear later. Let me go to the next slide where I'm introducing expectation values and the probability distribution. Then I think this will be clear. We can also make use of that there's a subset in SUN or UN of commuting operators. This is the Cartan subalgebra. This will also allow us to minimize the number of ontic properties introduced. So in the model below, this is the number we're going to get when we do everything. And this has to do with eigenvalue spectrum and so on. But let me get back to that later. This hopefully clarifies things. So now we introduce an epistemic distribution. And it's functioned on this huge space here. And here are the eigenvalues of the generators we introduce. And just by summing of this I, and I is this multi-index here, we just postulate that we get CA. So these are the hidden variables, all these guys here, and they sort of just take on values 1 to n, 1 to n. This looks very abstract later. We're going to get to.
So that's what's making. Why don't they take on values why do they take on values 1 to n? Is that just your choice?
Suppose one of these operators is this position operator for a lattice. then they will be either here or to there. It's just a natural. But you're correct, there's even arbitrariness here. You could have more if you like, but not less.
Things could be sort of, they could take values, something or not something, so each of them could be by value rather than having end values. Because that would still supply you with enough generators.
So the key point is here, the only thing I want to do here is to get these expectation values. So I'm still not sure how to present this in a logical best way, but the only goal here is for me to get these expectation values right. Because we're also going to enter the Schrodinger equation, I want to reproduce the Schrodinger equation better, and so on. So this I can certainly do if this index, for example, this guy goes from 1 to n, and all of this goes to 1 to n. I'm sure to be able to reproduce those things.
So how does the eigenvalue depend on the multi-index guy?
The eigenvalue here, this could be hugely degenerate.
So that's the eigenvalue of an operator A, which is, and you're summing over.
Yeah. So there's an operator TA, which is one of these SUN operators. And this has an eigenvalue spectrum. Maybe I should just write down. Did I get strokes? Yeah, not strokes. One of these operators just look like this. You can take, for example, an operator like that. This will have eigenvalue 0 and plus minus 1, or whatever, half or whatever, depending on normalization. So I'm sort of giving away the future of the story, but in the end of the day, you only need three ontic properties in order to get the expectation value right.
My confusion is just the sum over I, when you say it's a multi-index, the I1 to IN squared minus 1 labels these operators. So for each set of multi-index, for each capital I, there's a list of such operators. So which of those does the A in the lambda sub A refer to?
So changing IA here, for example, here, if this guy, IA, so this is the specific IA, it goes from 1 to n. For a certain number of these values, lambda A, IA, is equal to 0. For another part of it, this is equal to plus 1. And for the last part, is equal to minus 1. So I'm summing over I, which also means that I'm summing over A, which also means that this guy will vary. So it's just, you can think of it in this way. I1, IA, IN squared minus 1. If I put the sum here in front of it, I1, IA, IN squared minus 1, I can, because this guy doesn't depend on all the others, it only depends on IA. So I can sum over all the guys here, and I get IA, rho of IA, so this is the sort of the traced out probability distribution, and the IA. So this is the marginals, and of course I'm going to be able to put these things so I'm getting the right expectation value. Yeah, this is a bit short, maybe. Is it reasonably clear? Yeah. So here's sort of the point I made with Bell before. Of course I can introduce more properties with non-commutative operators. there's no problem whatsoever. It's only when you have further constraints or something like that you have a problem. So here's the important thing. We know that the quantum state is uniquely determined by specifying the distribution rho I. Because from rho I, we can form the CA, and the CA gives you the quantum state. So this is exactly the key property we want. We want our probability distribution on all big states to uniquely determine the quantum state. So this is a different feature than in the Broglie-Cohen theory. Next, we assume that the evolution of this rho I is governed by a master equation. So this looks like this. Because of this, we have two distinct ways of computing this number, rho dot I now. One is through the Schrödinger equation, and one is through the master equation. So these two expressions are the following. The dot here, you just put the dot inside this guy. And then this guy, you can compute with the master equation, and by some fitting with indices, you get this expression here. But C dot, you also know, looked like this from the Schrödinger equation that derived before. And then you get this expression. And those have to agree. If they don't agree, I don't get Schrödinger the equation correct. So equating both those signs give me one equation here now. Or rather, there's a free index C here. There should be a sum here. Those A's and B's are summed over. And more typos here. There should be an A here as well. This is lambda A, sorry. This is one free index C here. This should be regarded as an equation for the transition rates here. So this is how I can use the Schrödinger equation to provide restrictions on the choice of transition rates. And also there's still the typo here. That's should be JA there. One way is to put just the thing in the bracket zero. This thing here, inside here, we just put zero, then attribute it zero. But on reflection, this is way too restrictive because it would imply that the Schrödinger evolution was valid for all distribution. But we can only safely assume the Schrödinger evolution to be satisfied for equilibrium distribution. So this is one key feature of de Broglie-Bohm theory as well, that you can have non-equilibrium distribution, non-quantum distributions. So we're only forced to have a weaker condition that this vector here, VC, or this set of vectors, because there's n squared minus one of those, all of those should be orthogonal to the equilibrium distribution. Now, let me do some plots here now. Suppose this is the space of probability distributions now, the epistemic ones on the ontic state space. Not all of them, but a few of them will yield me a positive density matrix. Now, and it's also true that there will be many row of I's that give me the same density matrix. So this is a nice fiber bundle structure, if you want. Here's the space of probability distributions. If I change it in this direction, I change these guys, these expectation values. If I change the probability distribution in a different way, I won't change the expectation values. So if you want to choose a specific equilibrium distribution now, you take a section here. So here's the problem. If the sections generally look like this, it's impossible to find vectors, VC, which are orthogonal to all of those guys. So I might have to go through this many times. If the equilibrium states can be contained in the subplane, then this is a key feature, because then it means I can choose these vectors here as orthogonal to this guy. Remember that this guy is made up of the transition rates. So here's the key point. If this vector is orthogonal to all equilibrium states now, then this guy don't depend on the quantum state itself. So when I'm moving along here, I'm changing the quantum state. But this guy is orthogonal to all of them. Suppose that wasn't the case. Suppose I had, we go back to this picture. If I walk along here, there will be no vector which is orthogonal to all of those guys here. And then in order to get the Schrodinger equation right, which is basically the inner product V and rho, in order to get the Schrodinger equation right, I need to let the vector V depend on what quantum state I have. Now that in turn will imply that transition rates depend on the quantum state, and I'm doomed. So it has to be the case, and this is sort of the key mathematical property this psi epistemic theorist has to satisfy. It has to be the case that the equilibrium distributions can be contained within a subplane. So it's already coming to an end. I can model general. Let me just keep this. Yes?
I'm just going to introduce a specific ontology.
So, the first Bell type ontological model you considered, you just had a PVM, and that was your ontic state. And you said, well, the problem with this is that it's not, it doesn't uniquely determine the state.
Yes.
So, I thought the natural generalization from that would be just using an informationally complete POVM.
This is more or less what I'm doing. Yeah.
Is that what that would be?
Yeah, more or less.
Then if it's a POVM though, you actually have positive operators, and you
use
the generators aren't positive operators.
So I can just take the collection of all the. So I mean, to a generator there would be a set of projectors, and to the next one there would be a set of projectors.
So take the projectors.
Yeah.
From the set of
projectors. But let me now go to. Now everything is all in the abstract. And I wanted to do it this way. And now I'm going to go to something much more specific. So and this is the specific model. And now things are going to make much more sense. You're going to have more intuition about what's going on, ontologically speaking. And it's a nice ontology emerging here. So the most, and if Steve is here, I want to thank him, because I was too embarrassed by SUN and all these B-algebras. I wanted to find a good representation of operators. And then he said, well, just choose these ones here. So basically, first you can note the symmetry of this operator here. If I flip the indices A and B, it's the same as B and A. So these guys are the ones which tells you which operator, and these are the indices that defines the sort of where I'm in the matrix. Yeah. These guys are anti-symmetric. So there will be n squared of those operators required. If you look, so here's where you can see where a natural ontology is merging when you just look at the structure of these guys. If you look at the diagonal operators where you put A equals to B, that's a set of n commuting projectors. That, I mean, the most simple thing you can think of here is that this will be a position PVM of a lattice. And since they're commuting, you don't need to associate ontological properties to all of them, but you can just have one property and that will account for all the statistics of all these projectors. The off-diagonal components, these are interesting. These are permutation operators that permutes these two points, A and B. So if you have a lattice like this, they change these points like this. An eigenvalue spectra is 0 and plus minus 1/2. This is because of my normalizations. Normally, permutation operators would have ±1, but I have a different normalization. The anti-symmetric ones are also a type of permutation operators. So let me just try to speed up a little bit. There's a natural ontology associated with this choice of bases. These guys would just represent the position PVM, as I said, on a discrete lattice of n points. So one property would just mean a definite particle position. And this is sort of just naturally arising when I'm doing it in this way. The symmetric operator here, this is a permutation operator, and has eigenvalues 0 and ±1. And here's the point. Since we only have three distinct eigenvalues, the property in UAV corresponding to this operator is only three distinct attainable values. So this would be another property, and it just takes these three different values. So here's the interpretation. We interpret UAV to mean that there's no link between the points A and B. Eigenvalue mu AB is equal to 1 plus 1 half corresponds to a non-direct bosonic link, and this time value is a non-direct fermionic link. These operators are anti-symmetric, and that suggests this direct links. So, well, first of all, if there's eigenvalue 0, there's no link. If there's this guy has eigenvalue plus 1, this means that there's a link starting from point A and ending up at point B. And then, of course, if you ask the opposite question, mu BA, you will get the minus sign because of the antisymmetry. But it sort of tells you that there's a directed link coming. So let me just show you pictures. So here's a particular ontology you can have. There's a definite point particle position here. It's definitely there. On top of that, you have a directed link here. This is a fermionic link, there's a bosonic link, and another directed link. You can have them in different directions. So this ontic state is characterized by this property. The diagonal ones, mu AA, is 4A, delta 4A, which means that it's definitely here. So the projector is 1 here, and all these other projectors are 0. Mu 2,4, if that's equal, here I can read it off in this picture here. 2,4, it goes from that direction. So it's minus half because it starts from this point and goes there and not the other way around. But for example, this thing here starts from 3 and to 7, and I get a plus here. This is the ontic state. So the collection of all these properties is my ontic state. Have I lost everybody? No?
And you can have values ascribed to places where the particle isn't. So 3 and 7 will have
links.
Yes. So every pair of positions will have both the fermionic and the bosonic type of links.
No. That's a good point. So I have these mu ABs, and consider now A different from B. Then these are these links. That can take value 0 plus minus a half.
Okay, so 0 is like no.
It's no link.
Okay.
But there's an interesting point to be made here. Since you have eigenvalue 0, you don't really need to have a property related to that either. But then you'll have always links between everything, and it becomes a mess. So I'm not sure if I want that, but that would be an even anorexic, slimmed down model even more. But I'm not sure I like that. This feels more natural. The permutation operators do have these three different values.
So in the master equation, does a particle jump on these links?
So now I need to find the transition rates, and then I can tell you something. I have some intuition. If you look at non-relativistic quantum theory, it looks that it's these directed links that will push the particle. These other fermionic and bosonic links, I'm not sure what they do, but they have something to do with the creation and destruction of these direct links. This is, but this could be wrong because it's messy. So let me continue now.
So the Hamiltonian depends on the Antic state, or hopefully
no. No, the Hamiltonian state doesn't depend on the Antic state. But this is also another speculation. Come to the end. Yeah. So that is an interesting point, in fact. So as before, I can expand the density matrix in this way, the Hamiltonian. And you can look at just compute the expectation values of these guys, and it's exactly just get returned those values. And that was the reason why I normalized it in certain fashion. The Schrödinger equation splits up into two equations like this. Remember, this is the C here, and that's a D there. So that's all in the quantum state. The A and B are all in the Hamiltonian. That's the Schrödinger equation. You'll do the same thing as before now. Use two expectation values in this way here. These are multi-indices, you know, all this stuff here. Because I have this property that only one of the projectors has value 1, trace 1 is just means that this guy is a normalized probability distribution. So here's the analog of these V vectors I had before. So the Schrödinger equation looks like this in the end. And I have to demand that this is 0 for all the quantum states. So this guy is here. Has to be independent of the quantum state for the transition rates to be independent of it. So this is I'm just rewriting this thing, this type of operators. I don't think I'll. Have much more time. There's also a notion of, just like in the Brown-Bohm theory, you'll have a notion of quantum non-equilibrium. And indeed, if you look at ontological models in general, this seems to be a general feature. I mean, it's hard to get away from. So quantum non-equilibrium states are those states for probability distributions for which you do not reproduce quantum theory. But in the Brown-Bohm theory, I don't know how many of you know about this, but if you take basically any distribution and you evolve it, you will relax the psi-square distribution, the quantum equilibrium distribution. And I would expect something similar to happen in these models. If it happens, it's great. If it doesn't happen, it's a catastrophe. It just means I have to toss away things. But so this is a long talk. You can generalize this to many body systems. The interesting difference here is that for lattice, we have non-local links in space. When you have many particles, these non-local links are between different points of configuration space. How does measurement theory work? How will I in the end reproduce the statistics of quantum theory? Well, I already have a definite position in the theory. So this will work exactly as in the Brown-Bohm theory. If I get statistics or positions right, I'll get everything correct. And then it just reduces the problem of getting the Schrödinger equation correct. Okay. So there's nothing to think about there. And contextuality will work out as in the Brown-Bohm theory. If you do two different measurements on the system, you can disturb it in two different ways, and you can get two different outcomes. Here is and I'll just end with this, and I won't torture you anymore. Here's a very important further restriction I have to put on this theory. If I don't do it, it's no good according to me. So this is a typical measurement type situation. I have a separation of wave packets in this way. Now, if I have transition rates supporting jumps from one outcome to another outcome, and back and forth and back and so on, this is not a very good theory. So this is what I call stability of records. You need to
once you end up in a packet here, representing outcome plus or whatever, you can only have local support. I mean, you can't have this non-local transition rates. This has to be completely zero to jump this far. A different way to picture this is if this is a discretized configuration space, I'll allow jumps to nearest neighbors like this, but I won't allow jumps to separated ones, because then I could get this mess that I don't have a definite outcome of the measurement, which is, I mean, if that happens, it's not good theory. So this means I have to have transition rate zero for all these things. That greatly reduces number of transition rates I can play with. There will still be a lot more transition rates than there are constraints imposed by the Schrödinger equation. So the number of transition rates grows exponentially, while the number of constraints from the Schrödinger equation only grows quadratically. So I won't bother you with the speculations unless you want to hear it on the discussion. Of course, you can just write down the normative Hamiltonian here, and you can see if you can reproduce the quantum statistics for this kind of Hamiltonians. So I think I'll stop there, because this talk is way too long.
So this is very interesting. I mean, this is sort of vaguely reminiscent of the game of time algorithms we were playing.
Yeah. No, I was surprised to find it. And also, it's just, it was really Steve Flamias. When I was in the general framework, and it's a complete mess.
Let me ask you what results you have. So if you give a Hamiltonian as the general form that you gave, so you give the A's and B's.
Yeah.
And you give a density matrix, which is C's and D's.
Yes.
Okay. Then generically, you still have another condition satisfied, which is the condition of being a Schrödinger equation.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
If you satisfy that, is it dynamically stable? That is, will it evolve such that that condition is still satisfied?
Yes. Or do you mean that?
In other words, if at a moment of time you satisfy
the Schrödinger equation with expectation values be the quantum.
Yes.
So indeed, there's two things. You have you want the probability distribution to give you the expectation values, right? Because those are the ones which enter in the Schrödinger equation, which you like to reproduce. And then secondly, you like your probability distribution to satisfy the Schrödinger equation. So this is sort of
right. So once it does from then on.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
So.
So then the question is, do you know anything?
Yes.
About, do you have some explicit solutions to those Schrödinger equation constraints?
That's the challenge. Yes. Yeah, so one of the problems now is this thing here. Those guys here, these are the VC vectors I had before. And it's together they're n squared of those guys. All of those have to be orthogonal, all equilibrium distributions, which means that all equilibrium distributions have to be able to be contained in a subplane, mm-hmm. in the space of the probability distribution. So I don't know if one can do that. So. Here's something which is enigmatic to me, and that's Lucien's ontological access Dagger theorem, which he says that any finite amount of ontic states, if you have a theory with finite domain ontic states, you will not be able to reproduce all the measurements of a qubit, for example, the statistics of all these measurements. So I know that for a finite lattice or anything like that, this model has to fail. So I cannot plug in any Hamiltonian. So let me go back a little bit here. So here's a general modeling of an arbitrary spin measurement model. I have a qubit here, and that qubit is measuring another qubit. So I start with a state like this. So this guy is prepared in a state like that, and this is just in a calibrated state, it's definitely up here. Then any measurement is just an interaction of Hamiltonian that evolves the system. And in the end of the day, I can just interpret, if this is definitely up here, then it's outcome plus. If it's definitely out there, it's outcome minus, for example. And there's a definite way to do this with these operators here.
Yeah.
And notice here also that what measurements I'm doing is just encoded in the Hamiltonian of the system, right? So if I can get the Schrödinger evolution right for all Hamiltonians, I'm done. But because of this ontological excess value theorem, I know that it can't be the case. If I plug in any speed measurement, it has to be that this model fails for at least some of these Hamiltonians. So I think that the key is the following, that if you plug in special Hamiltonians, you'll force the transition rates to go negative, and the model is bad. This is, but I can't see it clearly, but I think this must happen.
Yeah.
But you can also, you can do this model in detail. And it also raises the question, maybe the spin model or spin measurement model I already presented is empirically accurate, because there's a paper recently come out that says that if you have n ontic states, you can reproduce n measurements on a qubit. Now, in this model, I'll have a billion ontic states. So, in principle, although I'm not sure, this model will reproduce a billion different measurements on a qubit. So that means this is empirically accurate. But then again, this is just speculations. I haven't done any mathematics. I need to show exactly. I think it's all for the transition rates and all that stuff. Come on. So, I just wanted, if possible, to stress one point, which is sort of interesting. This non-local links ontology emerging is very natural. This representation of operators is the just most stupid representation you can use. Of course, I was much too intimidated when I started with just this. I had arbitrary generators. I had to know the eigenvalue spectrum of all those, and it was complete mess. And I talked to Steve Flamin as well, just with these guys. And you see that, shit, there's a position PVM in here. Oh, nice. These are permutation operators with three different distinct eigenvalues. But then you look at the symmetry properties, and you realize it's a directed and non-directed links becoming different flavors. So this is sort of a very nice ontology coming from.
Any more questions? Let's thank Hans.